radio for a really great future. We're talking real money.
I want to talk today about how important air is because I'm in Colorado.
Oh, I was wondering where we're going with this. Like, okay, yeah.
I was at 10,000 feet for 2 days.
You were some rarefied
in
air
Creek,
there.
Colorado. Apparently, the lack of air has gone to my brain.
You sound a little strange, yes. And again, the purpose of the program is to help you with whatever issue you have around your finances. And the reality is a lot of the information, most of the information that you get from radio, from television, from writing, is self-interested. It's written by people who want to get you to do something that will make them more money.
Is there a more powerful word than self-interest? There's got to be one, because it's certainly not anywhere near the client's best interest.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot. So, I mean, the reality is we want to help you understand. Okay. You mentioned the other word, the operative word there, the business. The business of money is it's not often designed to help your money. It's often to help the other guy's money. That's the reality. And we've got some topics today that will show that once again, that sadly, the money that others charge you to take care of your money ends up meaning that you end up with less money. Is that enough monies in one topic sentence there? So we want to help you understand it all better. I also want to mention one other thing. I was down in Tacoma on Thursday night, had a great audience out for my class down there. I want to thank you all for coming. We'll be back again soon. You know, we have an advisor now that's in Lakewood, beautiful Lakewood, Washington. So he's there regularly. So we're going to start to do more events in the South End. In fact, we have a huge one coming up in October. So our goal always is whatever age, whatever circumstance, whatever item comes up for you, we're here to help you make better decisions about all this. Sometimes we can help you stop from making a bad decision before you already have. Sometimes you already made it. So what? With the woman who was at the class on Thursday, I bought this annuity and I wish I hadn't, and I said, but you did. And now the key is to figure out what to do next and how to make your money work harder for you.
We had some great news last week, or week before last, or whenever it was, that we forgot to mention last week.
It's almost 2 weeks ago.
There's a magazine out there called FA, or Financial Advisor Magazine.
Indeed.
And they rank all of the registered investment advisory firms in America.
For growth.
Growth and size. They also rank them for the size of the various firms.
And that is how much money they are managing.
Correct. Right. And we found there's this little firm in the Puget Sound region in the Seattle market called Vestory. And it turns out that of all of the registered investment advisory firms in the Pacific Northwest.
Which includes what state?
Vestory,
what state does
that include? That includes Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, all those.
Alaska?
Idaho. Alaska. Includes Alaska.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, now I feel better.
Yeah. The fastest growing firm in the Pacific Northwest.
In 2016.
Is this little firm Vestory. In 2016. Well, this little firm called Vestory.
That's a big deal.
It's the 26th fastest growing firm in America.
Yeah. You know, somebody at work actually said, so you're number one in the Northwest. What are you going to do? And I said, when I'm number one in the nation, then I might take the afternoon off. But until then, keep going.
Yeah.
Get back
until
to
then,
work.
We're, yeah. No, so, we haven't reached our goal.
Anyway, that's a big deal. We want to thank our clients for that.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
A lot of them listen.
Yeah, we want to thank all our clients.
Yeah.
By the way, that's
that
our
here.
Firm. That's the one that Tom and I started back in late 2009 because we didn't really like what most of the firms were out there were doing. And
we that's not fair. What
people.
We said was we want to do things the way we want to do them, like any business owner does, right? Not that anybody else is doing it bad. I want to do it this way. We looked at all the things we liked from other firms, and let's incorporate those.
And we decided to not incorporate all the things we hated.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah.
Like, are we selling indexed annuities? Oh, no, we're not.
No.
Are
our office doors open before 11 o'clock in the morning? No. 11 to 1 every day. That's it.
It's short hours. I was reading the Wall Street Journal this morning, and I went through, and I was counting the number of stories that had to do with investing.
That's smaller and smaller.
This is the Saturday. It's one. It was one. Yeah. One.
Well, no, because on the back page of you don't read it that
talking
way.
About, like,
but
the journal report.
They do. They always do the market and blah blah. Here's what happened last week and blah. That's.
But that's not investing.
Yeah. Okay. That's market behavior. You can define it. No, it's not really about how to invest. It's not really about things to avoid when you do invest. No, that's true.
Is it of any help to any investor to look at what the market did yesterday?
It shouldn't be. And by the way, the one article that you should have read today, if you read the Wall Street Journal, is written by the guy that we think you should read almost every week.
That was the one article.
Yeah, and it's still, just when I read it, it's honestly, it's one of those things that shocks me. It really does, because we, the group, all of us that are here, that are listening, we've been through this, but apparently it doesn't resonate. And what we're talking about is you in a 401k plan, which should be about saving for your retirement, right? This is the money, and fewer people get pensions. So the money you need to set aside to finance your years after you quit working, that should be invested in a widely diversified, low-cost portfolio for your need for return within how much volatility you can take. And yet, so many of you, shocking numbers, almost half of the money, for example, in the Costco 401k plan. That's really surprised me. Almost half of the, I think it's over 40%, is invested
41.
Invested in Costco stock. Now,
41.7.
I love Costco dearly. I mean, I was lucky to interview Jim Sinegal for many years on TV. Love the company. Just went there last night for full disclosure.
Yeah, I buy way too much stuff there.
I do too. It's a great firm, right? It seems to be run well, and I love the fact that they put the employees and the customers well ahead of what they care about Wall Street. That's terrific. No argument. But why would you take all, if you work there, why would you say my job's dependent on this company and my retirement? Why put all those eggs in one basket? Number two, here's the part of the article that I forgot, Don, until he pointed out again. Half of the publicly traded companies, half in their entire lifetime of being publicly traded companies, have made less as stocks than just putting the money in cash. Let me say that again. Only half of the firms that you could have invested, you might be working at one of those and putting it in that firm today, have
I
made more
come
than
back
cash.
To that.
Oh,
I want to come back to that point. I want to come back to that point in just a little bit, because there is a bigger issue associated with the fact that half the firms out there made less than cash. There's a huge investing lesson in there. But I want to go back to these company plans and the abject stupidity of being heavily invested in your own company's stock. This is not bright. And this is an example from the story.
That's
that
about
Jason
the nicest
Zweig
I've
wrote.
Ever heard you describe that, by the way. Not bright. I think it could be a little stronger there.
51% of all of the money invested in Kroger's, the grocery chain's employee savings plan, 52.9% of the stock is in Kroger, or of the funds are in Kroger stock. Well, the shares of Kroger fell a great deal just last week, and the employees of their entire fund, this was like a crash, like a market crash for their retirement fund. They lost 7% in 2 days of their entire portfolio just because of a drop, and it wasn't even a horrible drop in Kroger stock.
This well, 26%, that's pretty horrible.
But it's not like they went to zero like an Enron or something.
No, no. And by the way, the reason that they went down is because Amazon, it appears, is going to be a bigger player in the grocery business, right? I mean, that was so bang, that means the other guys in the business, things don't look good. But the point is, number one, concentration is a bad philosophy at any time.
That's my point.
But number two is because we believe this. We're in this company. We know this company. We feel like we're inside in somehow. I trust it because I work here. Yeah, I find confidence people have in their own firm because they work there. And part of this survey that we were just talking about that looked at Sherwin-Williams, by the way, is the worst. Sherwin-Williams apparently is painting their employees right into the corner because 65% of... thank you. That was yours. I stole
that was
it from
a
you.
Good line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because 65%, two-thirds of the money in the retirement plan is in Sherwin-Williams stock. So, I mean, that's outrageous. But, I mean, and just for full opportunity here in the Northwest to pick on everybody in the list, PACCAR, a great builder of trucks right in our region, they have 44% of their... But here's the part that I find fascinating. They surveyed these people that have all this stock. Less than one-third believe that owning one stock is riskier than owning the whole market. They believe that, no, there's no more risk in owning just in my company stock. That's crazy. But just think that through for a moment. Just think it through just rationally. Is it riskier to own one company or to own 12,000 companies?
But, Tom, it's my company.
I know, but I'm just saying, if you're home listening saying, yeah, you guys make a lot of sense, blah, 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 but I know Costco because Costco's going to be here forever, or Amazon because, hey, I would have rather owned Amazon from 1997 through 2017 or 2016 when it's made over 30% a year, right? That's easy. It's and that's going straight to the... It has to keep going straight up, right? But just to, again, into argue, not to get into the specifics of the company, but think about risk. It has to be less risky to own thousands of companies than it is to own one. It has to
be. Here's the real meat that underpins this, the foundation of this whole issue. Companies rise and fall from favor. They rise and fall in our hearts and minds. And here's a great example, since you used Amazon. Amazon is the largest online retailer in the world by far, and on its way to becoming one of the largest retailers in the world.
Yeah.
But it wasn't very many years ago that there was another largest retailer in the world. And when was the last time you went into a Sears store?
I walked through one because it was on the way out of the mall recently.
I don't think I have been in a Sears store or even walked through a Sears store in at least 15 years.
And you're a former employee.
And
a couple of times.
I worked in the corporate headquarters, in stores. I worked for Dean Witter when they were part of Sears. I was a big Sears advocate, and I thought Sears was great. Matter of fact, in my company 401k, when I was in my 20s, what did I own primarily?
Sears stock. Yeah, of course.
And that's done
so
horribly.
Just to go back to, because I believe when I read these numbers, these huge concentrations of company stock in company retirement plans, here's my belief. Very few people probably run out to buy the company stock. They end up with it when it's a match. So what should you do when the company matches in that company stock?
Don't hold the stock.
Okay. But I mean, that's the thing.
Sell the stock.
But people, and we'll talk about people just saying, I'll do that on Monday. I'll get to that later. We'll talk about the cost of all that.
It's free money.
But you want to sell it
and
then buy the diversified portfolio. And by the way, we're already working on revamping the entire 401, 411 site. We're going through all the plans there and rebuilding. And we'll talk more about this next week when Paul Merriman joins us on the program. But we're revamping that.
Oh, Paul's helping do that?
Yeah, Paul's on board. He's helping. Anyway, so I don't think I've told you about this because you've been out on the road for like 40 days and 40 nights or something.
Yeah, well, I had to escape the floods in the mountains.
Tom and Don are talking real money.
Quick break. In addition to our Talking Real Money podcast, we have a few other tools to help you gain a better understanding of the concept of real investing. Of course, there's Real Investing Journal. That's offered in both a free online version and in an inexpensive printed magazine. Explore both those options at realinvestingjournal.com, realinvestingjournal.com. Then we teach classes. We offer most of our live classes in the Seattle area because that's where most of our offices are, but most of you live elsewhere. That's why we're now offering the same classes that Tom and I taught at Retire Meet online right now, free at TalkingRealMoney.com under the video link. Just go to TalkingRealMoney.com and then click on the video link. You'll see them right there. Finally, we also manage the wealth or the budding wealth of hundreds of folks like you through our fee-only 100% fiduciary investment advisory firm, Vestory. You'll find our approach is consistent with the message we've been sharing for decades. We always put our clients' needs first. Our fees are among the lowest of any non-robo-advisor, and constant education is one of our core values. Visit Vestory.com for more information on our firm and to take our free no-obligation risk quiz to better understand the level of investment volatility you can tolerate. That's Vestory.com, Vestory.com.
Reality radio for a really great future. We're talking real money.
The biggest problem I think people have when it comes to investing is they feel like there is some complex jargon and knowledge that they need to participate, and they don't.
And because that's the industry has sold them that for the last 80 years, that you got to hire somebody to pick the right company. We'll talk about Bill Miller a little later. I find that fascinating. But you got to find the guru, or you got to have the inside, right? You, as we said, maybe you work at that company, so you know really what's going on when the rest of the world does not really know what's going on. Or you have some insight from somebody else as to sort of when to be in the market, right? Like the last 8 years, and then when to be out of the market, which nobody really knows. And you mentioned fees. I mean, this is fascinating that more and more people, more and more of you listening, have figured out that paying more to others means you keep less. I mean, and there's no way around this. People have, because it gets back to this whole thing, what you said, that the industry wants to make this horribly confusing that you just give us your money.
They're more valuable.
Yeah,
they appear
absolutely.
More valuable.
Absolutely. Instead of just owning an index fund. Well, I love the fact that so many of you have decided that, nah, that doesn't make sense. In fact, last year, $326 billion went out of the high-cost actively managed mutual funds, and $429 billion went into low-cost index funds. And here's the other part that you need to know. Whether or not you truly believe that, as Don said, investing is this thing that nobody can figure out and I need to hire somebody to do it, or you say, I'll take what the market gives over the long haul. The numbers are astounding from this New York Times piece that that you read that my brother, who is not money-oriented, sent to me, I think it was yesterday. But here's a number that I think you should pay attention to. One well-known calculation, this from the article from the Department of Labor, found that over 35 years, so those of you who are like 30 years old, right, who are thinking, it doesn't matter, I'll pick a few funds, a difference in one percentage point between in each year, you make one percentage point less each year because you're paying more in fees or your asset allocation is improper, whatever it is, ends up changing the final value of your 401k account, remember the money that's going to pay you in retirement, by almost 30%. Now, is that important? Is that enough to get you to say, I better pay attention to this?
Wait, 30%. That's a third.
That's almost a third. That's a whole lot
it's
of money.
It's a lot like a third.
Yeah, so,
yeah. All right, though. Now, wait, though. I do want to bring some clear, because there's a lot of confusion about fees, and I want to clarify the whole idea of fees, because there are fees, and then there are fees. And there are fees that, because we can't, there's nothing out there that you're going to get for free. And anybody who tells you that you can become a great investor on your own for free is...
Well, you could pick stocks and own those yourself, but the problem is you can't own enough of them to really build a diversified portfolio. And that's still not going to be free.
But the other thing, here's where the confusion comes in, I think. I was talking to a young man last night who had a bunch of mutual funds, and I was telling what I believed, and he goes, I'm the same way. And I said, well, what kind of funds do you have? He goes, well, I went to a friend of my mom's, and he put me into some American funds and some Oppenheimer funds, and I'm going, okay.
You don't
but
believe
the
same
deal.
Way. Stop. No,
here's
you don't.
Here's the deal. Well, but here's the deal. I said, one, you have active funds, but that wasn't the issue.
Actively
managed funds. The issue I wanted to get to with him was you are paying about 1% per year for those funds, but what are you getting for that 1% per year?
I can tell you one place I guarantee you're paying too much.
Wait, you can guarantee something?
I guarantee this. I guarantee.
Wow.
Because if you
want to
own the Standard & Poor's 500 index in a mutual fund, 500 companies, that's it. You can go to Charles Schwab now and pay 3 basis points.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty doggone cheap.
0.01%.
Yeah, pretty small, okay?
That's about as close to free as you can get.
Yeah, you can go to Vanguard and pay 4 basis points, which, still pretty doggone. I mean, that's pretty reasonable.
But here...
Let me finish.
All right.
Because you could go to RIDEX. You could go to RIDEX. I'm giving you the other side of the equation here. You could go to RIDEX and own their... here's the ticker, RYSOX, the RIDEX S&P 500 fund.
RISOX. Isn't that a baseball team?
The RISOX. And guess what you pay there? 1.55% a year on top of the sales fee of 4.75%. So there's a way you could guarantee... It always reminds me that when you're buying gas, one gas station, and I just saw this the other day, charging $2.43 a gallon, the guy across the street charging $2.89 a gallon. And I'm thinking, is it that much better? So anyway,
I bet there weren't any cars at the 289
nobody.
Pumps.
And I'm thinking, it doesn't make sense. But anyway, that's one way you could
save
your money.
I think Breaking Bad, I think money laundering. I think money laundering.
I thought that was a car wash, but okay.
Well, but you could do it with a gas station.
That's true. Money kind of comes in. Okay.
I was talking to a family, a couple of folks in Cripple Creek, Colorado, which is a place where gambling is legal. It's an old gold mining town, and they legalize gambling to try to revive the economy. And
surprisingly enough,
many of the casinos have shut down because it's at 10,000 feet and it's a long way from anything. But one,
you
of
don't
the
want
casinos
to have
shut
thin
down.
Air when you're trying to gamble. It's tough enough. So
I was thinking, if you want to get people to really stick with the gambling, have oxygen bars.
Yeah.
We can go up. Okay, I can gamble
better.
Again.
Yeah.
But anyway, there was a casino up there that operated for many years, and they lost their gaming license because it turns out one of the primary equity partners was a Russian mob. mobster who was using it to launder money.
Moving the money through there.
Any place where cash moves, in a gas station, cash moves. Sure. So nobody comes in. That's okay because they're showing that they're selling gas. It was a money launderer.
Now, I think it's harder today, though, because so few people are using cash to buy anything anyway. But you'd have to come be swiping the card over and over again.
There was an interesting story last week. Visa is going out to restaurants around the country and paying them up to $10,000 to redo all of the to update all of their credit card equipment
to go to no cash.
As long as they agree to go no cash.
Yeah, no cash. But here's the back to that for a moment.
We're talking real money.
No, for the life of me, I do not understand, and maybe it's just me. These credit card companies charge a ton of money for the transactions. Remember, I'm on the other end of the transaction because my wife's got this business where they take credit cards. It's wildly expensive. Wildly
expensive. Can you define wildly expensive?
I think it's like 3 or 4% of the transaction.
She's with the wrong company because if you go to Stripe, here, I'll look it
up. She uses,
Square.
She uses Square.
Square?
Yeah.
Square only charges 1.95.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 2% for any, to use the, that's crazy to me. Way too high. For all the volume? No,
I look at it as handling cash, the whole process. It's so difficult to handle cash. Like, for example, from a merchant's perspective, if you're handling cash as a merchant, what is your internal cost of the handling, the counting, the security, the person who has to go to the bank and deposit it? What does that cost you? I think sometimes people are being short-sighted.
Okay, but how much does it cost to swipe a card, have it electronically, this, and then nothing? Come on, it doesn't cost 2%. No way.
No. There's got to be a profit in there.
I'm talking, it's like my kid who just got on the bus for $50 the other day. I was like, come on, that's crazy.
Does it cost you, to handle cash, does it cost you somewhere in the vicinity of 1% or 2%? If it does, if handling cash has that kind of a cost associated with it,
you got a point,
then the ease of credit makes, because for a customer, I rarely carry cash. I just don't have much cash on me.
Trying to think what I got.
The cards are very helpful. The only reason I have $40 in my wallet right now was because I did speculate over the weekend.
Yeah, how did it come out?
I did. I speculated.
You have 40? I have 44. I finally got more than you. This is a big day for me.
I have the Don McDonald gambling. This is my casino system.
Yeah, all right.
This is my no-lose casino system.
Yeah, we were both gambling this week because I did the horses last Sunday, too.
I never lose money at a casino.
No?
Never. I have never lost money at a casino.
Oh, this is your get-the-free-drink, blah, blah, blah thing, right?
We went to the bar in Cripple Creek, sat down at the poker machines. We each got $20 in $1 bills.
Yeah.
Because they don't take quarters anymore in the machines.
They don't. Most of them take cards now.
Well,
when I was in Vegas, most of them didn't even take
cards. We were feeding dollars in, but only betting a quarter at a time.
Too slow.
And commenting, we're not there to make money. We were there to get, over the course of 2 hours.
I saw those people in Vegas. Ugh.
We had 3 free drinks each.
I see where we're headed here.
For
$40. All right. Okay. So they weren't free, they were free. Got it. Okay.
Well, we paid $40 for 3 drinks each. How much would you go to a bar and sit and have fun talking to someone and pay for three? You pay $40.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So I get it.
I lost no money.
Okay. Good for you.
That's
but
all
back
the gambling
to the
I
visas,
ever do. Wait a minute. How much
thing.
Did you lose on the horses? No.
I don't know.
How much did you lose?
I really have no idea. I did like three or four bets. I couldn't tell you. Because there were three of us, and your daughter was picking, the one because it had the pink and black, and I was okay.
That's because you're embarrassed to say, aren't you?
And then on the last race we stayed for, I put it all, whatever I had left, on a horse because it was the name of the guy I was there with. And it did not pay.
All right. I'm going to help you with one other helpful
I don't have a gambling problem, if that's where we're going with this.
Apparently you
I'm
do.
Not
Apparently
a gambler. No,
next time you go to the I learned this from the head of...
Oh, this is the long hair or the urination thing? Which
no,
one?
No, okay. This is actually practical. I learned this from the head of publicity for the Kentucky Derby. All right. And Randy, you're next. Welcome to Talking Real Money.
Hi, Randy.
Hello, guys. Hi.
Hi, thanks for calling. What can we do for you, sir?
Sorry, I didn't hear feedback on my end. I was making sure we were good.
We're good.
What I'm curious about is I have a 401k. Well, I had one at my last job. I know an IRA because I left the job, so I had to move the 401k money to an IRA. But what about, can I have another IRA to open up, or a simple or a SEP? I'm trying to make sure. Can I only have just one IRA? Or
no, you could have more than one. You could have more than one. I don't know why you would, but you could.
Yeah, no, I think think I see what you're getting at. Can you do more than, how old are you?
I'm 37.
Okay. You only can do $5,500
well,
a year.
Well, now wait, if he does a simple or a SEP, you could do more depending
well, now
on your
that, wait,
employment
we're getting
situation.
There. Yeah. See, that's where it, you can only do $5,500 in a regular or Roth IRA in total in a year.
In total. So even if I had five IRAs, then I've got to stop at 55. Okay,
that's
I got
it.
You
got
right.
it. You got it.
That's the
but
government
if
rule.
You have self-employment income.
Yeah, that's a different matter.
Then right. you get into the ability to fund from that income a SEP or a simple IRA.
You could do an I-401k too, by the way.
And an I-401k. Yeah. So there are other options, but only if you have self-employment income.
Well, I have a business license, but right now I'm an hourly employee, so I'm
then that won't
really
work. You would have to actually, yeah, you would actually have to on your tax return claim self-employment income on a Schedule C.
Yeah,
is that right?
C. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a tax attorney. I'm pretty sure it's Schedule C. And if you don't have that, then
there's not enough there to justify it. Yep. So I understand.
Right. Okay.
Okay. But
so
it's a maximum of that $5,500 I'm hearing. It's overall. So if I had five, I need to stop at whatever.
Till you get really old. Till you get really old like us, and you could do $6,500 at age 50 and older.
But now, Randy, there's another option that people kind of overlook, and it's not as tax advantage. But for example, let's say you're going to do and this is only for as an example, this is for illustrative purposes only. You're going to do a 50-50 portfolio. You want to put another $5,500 into your retirement portfolio, but you can only put $5,500 in an IRA. You're going to put 50% in stock, 50% in bond. Okay, put all your bonds in your Roth IRA, because those will be taxable as income. Put all your bonds in your Roth IRA because they will grow tax-free. All of those dividends, all that income will grow tax-free. Then put another $5,500 in a globally diversified mutual fund, because they grow tax-deferred. All of those capital gains that they don't pay out to you continue to accrue without taxation, and whenever they do pay you something, it's going to be in the form of a capital gain, which is taxed at a maximum, probably in your bracket, of 15%. If you had bonds outside of the 401k, you'd get taxed at your ordinary income rate on all the distributions from that.
You lost me on the Roth part. I mean, a Roth should be the riskier asset because it grows tax-free.
No, the Roth should be the more taxed assets.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about this off the air, because I'm disagreeing with you here about that.
Well, no, but think about it for a minute. This is actually a good disagreement, Randy.
Okay.
Think about it for just a minute. A Roth IRA, yeah. If you've got your bonds in there and they're paying out their 2-4% dividends every year.
You get the same thing in the IRA. That's tax deferred.
No, I know. But if you put those bonds outside of the IRA
then you're going to pay tax on them. I got that. But generally speaking, for most people, it makes sense to take more risk in the Roth because that's growing tax free. Bonds are less risky and lower growth than stocks. He's scratching his head.
I'm just saying you can use the stock portfolio. Using a stock portfolio, though, as a regular place to put money without being under the shelter is still tax sheltered. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. I think what people are hearing is put bonds in Roth and put stocks
if you had, for example, a 50-50 portfolio, instead of putting your bonds outside of your Roth, put them in your Roth so you don't have to pay taxes on those and have all your tax advantage, get the tax advantages of the stock market, of the capital gains market.
And the other thing, for somebody at 37, you should have very little in bonds. I mean, generally speaking, because you've got a long time, you need them to grow. Does that help?
Well, that does help, but I guess I'm leery to get into much because I have enough other student loans and even some credit cards and stuff.
Pay those high interest, especially the higher interest.
Always get rid of those.
That's why it's like, I'd love to throw more in my retirement and get into that, but I'm wasting more money doing those things, so let's get rid of
those. Set up an Acorns account. Go to acorns.com and set up an account there and just use the equity products there, and that'll give you an additional savings that you won't even notice you're doing. Good luck, Randy.
Just to get back to kind of the financial plan, if you have high interest rate debt, like credit cards or unsecured loans or something like that, you're going to want to pay those down before you probably even start saving for retirement, because if you're paying 10, 15, 18%, it makes no sense. sense to be putting money into stocks and hoping to make 8 or 10%.
Right. No, get rid of the high interest debt first, always. That's just that's a law of money.
Tom and Don are talking real money.
We hope you're enjoying one of the more unique podcasts out there, but we want to remind you that there are other tools we offer to help you get educated about what we call real investing. We publish Real Investing Journal both as a free online version and in an inexpensive printed magazine. You can check those out at realinvestingjournal.com. Then we offer classes, most of which are in the Seattle area, but now we've got a couple of the classes that we taught at Retire Meet online for free at talkingrealmoney.com under the video link. Just go to talkingrealmoney.com, click on the video link. And finally, we rarely mention it, but we also manage wealth for hundreds of folks and well over a third of $1 million through our fee-only 100% fiduciary investment advisory firm, Vestory. We manage money just as we talk about it. We always put our clients first, our fees are low, and we educate you on a regular basis. Go to Vestry.com to learn more, and you can take our free no-obligation risk quiz to understand the level of investment volatility you can tolerate. That's Vestry.com, V-E-S-T-O-R-Y.com.
For your real life and real future, Tom and Don are talking real money.
And we are indeed, and we do it with you every Saturday from noon until 2 on the West Coast, because we're in Seattle live on Saturdays on KOMO. And but if you're on the East Coast listening to the podcast, call us between 3 and 5 at 877-397-5666. Mark, you're next. Welcome.
Hi, Mark.
Hi. Can you guys hear me okay?
We hear you great.
Absolutely.
Great. Long podcast listener, first time caller. So my question is, I'm 55. I probably have to work somewhere between 5 and 10 more years based on my personal situation before I can retire. I am a pretty high risk guy. I took your online risk quiz and I think I scored a 75.
That's pretty good.
And okay. That's pretty good.
My question is, I guess, am I properly diversified in my 401k? And so if you want, I can give you kind of what
the numbers are. Give us a couple of tickers,
are.
Yeah, or something. Give us a little bit.
Yeah, give us some stuff.
Okay, so the way it breaks down, and I work for a large aerospace company in the Pacific Northwest, but they use a company, I think they're called Financial Engines.
Yeah, we know the company, we know the plan.
Mm-hmm. So it says I'm 3% cash, 8% bonds, 26% large cap, 18% mid-small cap, 24% international, and then 21% individual equity.
Okay, so the last part we're going to tell you that you shouldn't do that, because we started the program off talking about people that own that have significant amount of company stock in their 401k plan. Is that on
purpose?
You're going
to guess what stock that is?
Well, I won't say the company
pretty
if he doesn't
sure
want us
I
to.
Know.
But do you own that firm for a reason, or is that, tell us why you own your company stock?
So of my company stock, I own about 10%, but the way this works is I can include outside IRAs in this overall analysis. And so I own, my wife has an IRA that she moved her 401k stuff into that IRA. And then I have also have a IRA.
And you have company stock in those two outside plans?
No, I don't. I have a very small amount of company. Right. Stock outside of the 401k.
Yeah, I think that's what the question. Hold on just a minute, Mark. We've got to run to take care of some news and stuff. But here's the question. That individual stock that you have, one, is that in your retirement plan at work? And two, you don't have to say the company, but is this one company or is it multiple companies?
Are talking real money.
Quick break. In addition to our Talking Real Money podcast, we have a few other tools to help you gain a better understanding of the concept of real investing. Of course, there's Real Investing Journal. That's offered in both a free online version and in an inexpensive printed magazine. Explore both those options at realinvestingjournal.com, realinvestingjournal.com. Then we teach classes. We offer most of our live classes in the Seattle area because that's where most of our offices are, but most of you live elsewhere. That's why we're now offering the same classes that Tom and I taught at Retire Meet online right now
free at TalkingRealMoney.com under the video link. Just go to TalkingRealMoney.com and then click on the video link. You'll see them right there. Finally, we also manage the wealth, or the budding wealth, of hundreds of folks like you through our fee-only 100% fiduciary investment advisory firm, Vestory. You'll find our approach is consistent with the message we've been sharing for decades. We always put our clients' needs first. Our fees are among the lowest of any non-robo-advisor, and constant education is one of our core values. Visit Vestory.com for more information on our firm and to take our free no-obligation risk quiz to better understand the level of investment volatility you can tolerate. That's Vestory.com, V-E-S-T-O-R-Y.com.
Reality radio for a really great future. We're talking real money.
We're talking to Mark right now about his portfolio, and is it diversified enough? And our one big question is, why so much in individual stocks? Tom?
Mark, tell us about the reason why you own individual equities.
So I guess main reason is I'm pretty much a buy and hold kind of guy, and I got into this 25, 30 years ago. And so I've bought stock. Some I haven't done very well on, others I've done pretty good on. And so I just have, outside of my company 401k, I have about 10 stocks. And inside
But just
401k,
to stop you for a moment, I believe you said that 25% of your holdings were in individual,
individual
stocks.
Stocks.
Did I hear that correct?
21%.
21%.
Yeah.
So one fifth of the money. We do not use for our clients, nor do we recommend, nor do we believe you should own them for the following reasons. Number one, there is no suggestion that the ones that you have picked, when you may have been very bright about this, will do better than a broad market. Number two, by owning so few equities as a major part of your overall portfolio, you're taking a ton more risk. Number three, and we mentioned this earlier in the show, which is fascinating to me, 50% of the publicly traded companies over their lifetime of being publicly traded companies have made less than cash. Not picking on you, but that would be one big change. Number two, in the plan that you're in at work, here would be my suggestions. We know the plan well. It's at our website, 401411.com, but it's going to change. Don doesn't even know this. This is brand new information.
I'm not kept in the
loop. All right, here we go. 10% I would put in the S&P 500 fund. 30% would go in the Russell 2000. See, Don's going, what is that? I'll tell you about it in just a minute. 20% would be in the international fund. This is a 60-40, kind of a balanced approach, which since you're 5 to 10 years from retirement wouldn't be bad. 10% in the S&P, 30% in the Russell 2000, 20% in international, 25, I think I have this right. Hang on.
Check your notes again?
Yeah. I 25% in the intermediate bond fund and 15% in the short-term bond in the stable value fund. Here's why. So you end up with a greater amount in the U.S. Generally, we tell people to balance between the U.S. and international. But in this case, because you cannot get any small or value companies in the international fund, basically, we say, we're going to shift that. You're going to own more small in the U.S. so that your overall portfolio has a greater exposure to that asset class. This is one change we're going to be making to the I hadn't even shared this with Don because he's been out on the road for years and days. Anyway, and Paul Merriman will be talking more about this because this is a project we're doing with Paul. But that's what I would do in the company plan. Here's the other one I think for you. Honestly, if you're within 5 to 10 years of retirement, my suggestion would be to go see somebody, a fee-only advisor. You could pay for one meeting. You probably get one free just to say, here's where I am. Here's where I'm trying to go. Am I doing the right things? I know you're getting some help from Financial Engines, but I would go to a fee-only registered investment advisor to get some help like that. Don?
He
has nothing to add. This is a first. I want everybody to hear that. He has nothing to
No, I will add, though, about the individual stocks. I do want to make this point to not just to you, Mark, but to everybody listening. The vast majority of the returns from the global stock market come from a handful of stocks. And none of us, not you, not me, not the guys in New York, none of them are smart enough to pick those few stocks. So the trick is owning all the stocks so you have the really great ones along with the typical portfolio that most people have of mediocrity. So you have your mediocres and your bads and your goods, and your goods really are the ones that really make you the money. So
thanks,
diversification
Mark.
Makes a lot more sense, and there's not as much risk involved.
Tom and Don are talking real money.
We hope you're enjoying one of the more unique podcasts out there, but we want to remind you that there are other tools we offer to help you get educated about what we call real investing. We publish Real Investing Journal both as a free online version and in an inexpensive printed magazine. You can check those out at realinvestingjournal.com. Then we offer classes, most of which are in the Seattle area, but now we've got a couple of the classes that we taught at Retire Meet online for free at talkingrealmoney.com under the video link. Just go to talkingrealmoney.com, click on the video link. And finally, we rarely mention it, but we also manage wealth for hundreds of folks and well over a third of $1 million through our fee-only 100% fiduciary investment advisory firm, Vestory. We manage money just as we talk about it. We always put our clients first, our fees are low, and we educate you on a regular basis. Go to Vestory.com to learn more, and you can take our free no-obligation risk quiz to understand the level of investment volatility you can tolerate. That's Vestory.com, V-E-S-T-O-R-Y.com.
Your guides to a really great financial future. Tom and Don are talking real money.
With the last caller, yeah. I mentioned that it's hard for anybody. It's impossible for anybody to pick winning stocks consistently. Sometimes they do, and by listening to or reading the financial press, I can see why you might think that there are these brilliant people out there, and if I just hire them, oh my gosh, I'm going to do like Bill Miller did.
Oops.
And Bill Miller, what? Bill Miller's his opportunity fund was a huge winner in the past year, right?
Well, and before that, remember, he beat the S&P 500 for 14 straight years.
Right.
When he was he was the guy. Now, they failed to mention that he didn't own stocks that were like those in the S&P 500. He was a value manager. So he was, the matchup with the benchmark was not correct. But
what
and then
was
he went out of favor.
Win?
Then he went
okay,
out of
but,
favor.
But he just won an award for like, what, the best fund for a
well,
year or something?
The Wall Street Journal's Winner's Circle contest, Don.
Yeah.
The
okay.
best stock fund performance over 12 months. Because if you bought, and by the way, when they talk about the performance, you always got to remember you got to buy it the day they said to buy it, and you got to sell it the day they said to sell it. Or you
oh,
didn't
wait,
get that.
I've got some numbers. So just that,
oh, yeah.
You know, you hear this first number, and yeah. you're going to go, I want that fund.
Give me that. The 12 months ending June 30th, and you can go look the fund up.
I'm looking right at it.
LMOPX, the Miller Opportunity Trust. 12 months ending June 30th, a return of 48.55%, almost 49%. Sign me up.
That is great, yep. Bill. Good job, Bill. Here's the rub. And you know, you don't even mind. If you make 48%, you don't mind paying the 2.13% annually
is that what
in
it is?
Fund expenses.
Woo!
2.13%.
Better make 48%.
But maybe we should look back a little farther. What do you think? Is 1 year indicative of the past? Well, Morningstar lets you look back 15 years, and not many funds have a 15-year track record. 15 years is a pretty good, that gives you a reasonable indication of how a fund might do. A little bit better. The more data, the better, I think. The longer the time.
Indeed.
So Bill Miller's Opportunity Fund, C, over the past 15 years, has returned an average of 8.5% per year, actually 8.4% per year.
That's pretty good, too.
Well, unless you actually compare that to the S&P 500.
I don't know what that's done.
8.97.
Oh, okay. Right,
without having to do a thing or yep. pay 2.13% per year.
Good point.
2.13. And here's the one of the bigger rubs of them all. How many stocks does Bill Miller hold?
Oh,
in
he always
fund?
Has a very now, concentrated portfolio. I know that.
The S&P 500, we know that number. How many stocks in the S&P 500, Tom?
500. Thank you.
Bill Miller's Opportunity Fund 33 stocks.
Ooh, so which one is riskier then?
Oh, gosh. Well, we can also look at another risk statistic, which is a thing called standard deviation.
Yeah. How much things
the
go up and they go down. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The lower the number, the less volatile the investment. So the S&P 500 over 15 years, Tom, has a volatility rating or a standard deviation of 14%.
Yeah, it's about what it's been for the last 50 years.
Yeah.
years, too,
14,
by the
15,
way.
16, mm-hmm. somewhere in that ballpark.
Yep.
You want to hazard a guess as the Bill Miller
I'm
standard
say
deviation?
Twice as much?
You pretty much nailed it. 27% standard deviation.
Yeah, so
over a long period of time, even though he was named the best performing fund for the past 12 months, if you stayed in the fund for 50, if you'd been in it for 15 years, you would have actually underperformed the S&P 500, paid more in fees, had a much higher degree of concentration risk of companies actually going out of business and destroying your portfolio, and a substantially higher level of volatility you would have had to stomach. In other words, you're riding that roller coaster that makes you want to throw up at times.
But here's the good news. You would have gotten to own Wayfair.
Oh, there's good news?
You would have owned the company called Wayfair, which is up 90% over the last 12 months, supplied a lot of the great return of that stock. I mean, that fund.
Now, was that brilliant or was that luck?
Well,
If it was brilliant, it would have happened every year over the past 15 years.
And we can't just pick on Bill, because Samantha McLemore, who is his co-manager, she's the one who came up with the Wayfair idea.
Well, and I like Wayfair.
I don't know the company.
About their stock.
I don't know the company.
Because you're going to be looking at their furniture when you get in the new office in a couple of weeks.
That's a good point. All right. Now you're ready. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. We did buy it from
them. Well, we're the frugal firm. Okay. We've stepped up one notch. We're no longer doing IKEA furniture in the office.
Well, no, we still have some IKEA furniture. It's not all going away.
But for our new office, we've actually stepped up to Wayfair cheap furniture.
By the way, somebody came in yesterday. Somebody came in yesterday who's had a very successful life in business. Very successful. Sold a business for a lot of money recently. And he looked around and he said, yeah, I like this. He remembered when some big corporation came into his business and said, get rid of all that crap and put all this stuff in. And they, and the business operator said, how much? And they told him, it was like $10 million. He said, no, we're good the way we are. Thanks a lot. We don't need to add all that expense on. So he liked our frugal
office. I don't get why people feel they have to have. I've heard it said that if you have an expensive looking office with a $10,000 table in the CEO's office or whatever, that people, they aspire to be like you. Baloney.
Right.
It's their flipping money.
Yeah, that's
you
exactly what he said.
You shouldn't be spending the client's money on ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
Only, yes, you should spend the client's money on stuff so you can do the job you're trying to do for them. That's reasonable. For example, we were talking earlier about putting in a video conferencing system so we could talk with our other advisors around the country and maybe get me involved.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I was looking. Cisco has a video conferencing system that costs about $15,000 to
$20,000.
Yeah, that's what
probably
they have in a lot
work.
Of places, whereas I was looking at one from Logitech on Amazon.
Oh, there's a well-known company.
It does all the same things, but it does it for $1,200.
All right, I'll
now,
vote for
that
one.
Which would a responsible firm buy?
Yeah, and by the way, even in my new office, which I'm really excited about, I was over there last week, Thursday, looking around. It's basically done. We're moving in 2 weeks. It's coming.
I know.
But even in the
I'll
new
be
office
there for the move.
With the new furniture, my new table will be under 5,000. I'm not going to go above 5. It's too much. So
you don't. I just measured your office. You
don't
have
no
room.
I know.
There's no room for it.
I know. Oh well.
You know, you might get an occasional table in the corner.
Good point.
You can set a beverage on.
Yeah.
But are you getting a table? No. Use a conference
fit.
Room.
Yeah,
get
okay.
over it.
I'll be back in the incubator in the back with the IKEA furniture.
Right. That's where we're putting the IKEA furniture.
Yeah.
You don't care about our office, but we are going to be moving into a new office. And just a little tease. So you can save the date, August 19th. Just write that down on your calendar.
Yeah, and we're not going to have very many people. We can't invite everybody.
We can.
I don't think so, because we're having our clients there, too. So there's a limit to the number of people.
They can come by.
All right, okay.
Why can't they come by? We're going to do the show live at our new office.
We're
I don't see why
live.
They can't come
okay.
by.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we're going to make the whole office open?
It's an open house. They can come in and visit.
Okay. So we got to hide everything away and lock everything down?
We won't have anything yet in the office. Hide everything
well, come
away.
On. Yeah, we will.
What do we have?
I
we
don't
have
know.
Wayfair cheap office furniture.
So what if somebody carries one of those out of there or something?
You know how much those particle board desks weigh? Have you ever tried lifting one of those?
No, I
have
not.
That's why we have people coming to do that.
Exactly.
Because my back and your back would not take it.
So that's the 19th of August. Yeah. So
19th of August. Just keep it on your calendar. We'll give you more information on that, because we would like to have folks come by and see the show, ask questions, that kind of stuff. It'll be fun.
Okay.
It'll be fun. So I'm getting back on the road. I'm heading from Colorado to Salt Lake City. So come out and see me at Salt Lake City. Go to TalkingRealMoney.com, TalkingRealMoney.com.
Tom and Don are talking real money.
Quick break. In addition to our Talking Real Money podcast, we have a few other tools to help you gain a better understanding of the concept of real investing. Of course, there's Real Investing Journal. That's offered in both a free online version and in an inexpensive printed magazine. Explore both those options at realinvestingjournal.com, realinvestingjournal.com. Then we teach classes. We offer most of our live classes in the Seattle area because that's where most of our offices are, but most of you live elsewhere. That's why we're now offering the same classes that Tom and I taught at Retire Meet online right now, free at TalkingRealMoney.com under the video link. Just go to TalkingRealMoney.com and then click on the video link. You'll see them right there. Finally, we also manage the wealth or the budding wealth of hundreds of folks like you through our fee-only 100% fiduciary investment advisory firm, Vestory. You'll find our approach is consistent with the message we've been sharing for decades. We always put our clients' needs first. Our fees are among the lowest of any non-robo-advisor, and constant education is one of our core values. Visit Vestory.com for more information on our firm and to take our free no-obligation risk quiz to better understand the level of investment volatility you can tolerate. That's Vestory.com, V-E-S-T-O-R-Y.com.
For your real life and real future, Tom and Don are talking real money.
And if you didn't get a chance to call in to get your free subscription to Real Investing Journal, but you would still like to get a year of the best magazine for real investors, no speculation, no fluff, no business news. It's Real Investing Journal. Comes out four times a year. It's regularly $25. But if you use the discount code KOMO, KOMO, COMO, you will get $10 off. So you'll take it down to $15. So go to realinvestingjournal.com. Use the discount code COMO.
We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for educational and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. Providing personalized financial planning or investing advice takes time, so please consult with a really good fee-only fiduciary investment, tax, or legal advisor. We know a good one. Investing must always involve risk. In other words, you can and probably will lose money at times. Also, as much as you want it, no one can accurately, consistently predict the future. So past performance doesn't tell you a darn thing about what the future will bring. Unlike many other programs that say something similar, Talking Real Money is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Vestory, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and disclosures. That should keep the lawyers happy.